Hello, this is Mary with the Herald and Review for Decatur, dated Friday, January 19th, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Erasing the Stigma of Mental Illness, Community Talk Seeks to Shed Light, Open Doors, by Jalen Cook of the Herald and Review, Dateline Decatur. It's not easy to fight the long-standing cultural stigma surrounding mental illness, especially in the African-American community. But the first step is talking about it, mental health and social services leaders said Thursday. They did just that in a two-hour free event, Triumph in the Mirror, Combating Mental Health Stigmas in the Black Community, at Doherty's Pub and Pins. The wide-ranging discussion featured representatives of Growing Strong, a Decatur-based sexual assault crisis center, and the Illinois Department of Human Services, as well as an open forum on how to seek mental health resources in central Illinois. We want people to live their lives, said Julius Bailey, the event's organizer. Living a whole life means getting out of the dark, and try to have people like us be there to hold you in case you fall. Bailey, originally of Decatur, is a former Millikan University professor turned lecturer, cultural critic, and award-winning author. His most recent book, Belonging, Triumph in the Mirror, served as the catalyst for the discussions at Thursday's event. The book is a memoir in which Bailey describes the sexual abuse he experienced as a child, struggles with depression and other mental health issues as an adult, and how he addressed those issues and regained control of his life. We're trying to open up the door of opportunity, said Bailey, an associate professor of philosophy at Wittenberg University in Ohio. We're trying to open up the door of hope. We're trying to open up the door of courage with stories like mine and with resources that we have across the state. We want people to live their lives. Mental health conditions continue to affect millions of Americans every year. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 18.5% of adults within the country experience mental illness within a year. African Americans and Hispanic Americans are likely to use mental health services at half of the rate of Caucasian Americans and Asian Americans, NAMI said. Bailey said many Black communities aren't as willing to be vulnerable about mental health struggles due to years of societal and cultural pressures to appear a certain way to others. It's time for that to start changing, he said. Dr. Melvin Hinton, chief of the Office of Mental Health Management and Addiction Recovery Services for the Illinois Department of Corrections, echoed those sentiments. We have to be honest, Hinton said. We have to start saying there's a problem and there's a concern. While Thursday's discussion specifically focused on fighting mental health stigmas in the Black community, Bailey said the event was open to anyone who wanted to come. The room at Doherty's was packed with people of all ages, races, and backgrounds. Mental illness can affect anyone, and the battle against it takes more than a few, said Department of Human Services Director Diana Nabe. You need to have hope, and sometimes you have to borrow that from someone else in order to begin to heal, she said. Continuing with an article from page one entitled Gearing Up for Competition, Johns Hill Dennis Robotics Teams Take Talents to State, by Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review, Dateline Decatur. First, Lego League competitions can be overwhelming if you don't know what to expect, particularly at the state level. It's like going to Comic-Con for the first time, said Liz Bartimus, the coach for the Johns Hill Magnet School Group. That's pretty much the only way I can describe it. Johns Hill and Dennis School are both headed to state competition January 27th at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. First, Lego League is, on the surface, a robotics competition. Students design and build a robot that has specific tasks to do based on that year's theme and game board. Johns Hill's team has 5 students who can write programs when most teams have 2 or 3 at most. However, there's far more to it than that. Robotics is important, but the real mission of the organization is for young people to learn life skills as they build their science and technology knowledge. Students learn and practice core values that include teamwork, the spirit of friendly competition, gracious professionalism, and the idea that what they learn is more important than what they win, and they should display their core values every moment during competition. From the moment you walk in, they're watching you, said Zane Romano, an eighth grader at Johns Hill, who is in his third year of First Lego League. You have to be kind to your teammates. You have to be sure you're working together. You have to make sure you're really eye-to-eye, cooperating, being gracious. It's so many things combined. It's kind of overwhelming, but it's also an amazing experience. The judges want to see if the students are being supportive of each other and their competitors, if they're calm and friendly and helpful and not arguing. During project presentations, for example, the judges look for professional behavior. They don't want you to talk with your hands, Zane said. That's really hard for me. The two teams practiced together Thursday so they could run through their presentations and practice their other competition skills. They can give each other some constructive criticism and tips, Bartimus said. Our group has been to state before, and we might be able to help with what to expect there. We're not experts, but we've been there before, and we kind of know what's going on. The first LEGO League theme this year is hydrodynamics, learning how to find, transport, use, or dispose of water. The Johns Hill Group's project is a filter with a test strip to help detect lead and the source of the contamination in drinking water. Johns Hill was one of 12 Decatur schools to have levels of lead in drinking water samples higher than the 5 parts per billion state standards when test results were released in May, which is what inspired the project. Maggie McLaughlin is a member of the Dennis team, and in her first year of First LEGO League, friends urged her to give it a try and told her she'd enjoy it. And they were right. Seventh grade for me is all about kind of experimenting with who I am, Maggie said. I really like doing the project part because that's where I can really show my creativity, and it's fun putting things together and finding out how things work. The first LEGO League core values are as follows. We are a team. We do the work to find solutions with guidance from our coaches and mentors. We know our coaches and mentors don't have all the answers. We learn together. We honor the spirit of friendly competition. What we discover is more important than what we win. We share our experiences with others. We display gracious professionalism and cooperation in everything we do. We have fun. And now continuing with local and state news from page A3, with an article entitled Radio Host Bax Calkins by Tom Lisi of the Herald and Review, Dateline Decatur. Chicago-based conservative radio commentator Dan Proft, an influential operative in Illinois Republican politics, has spent thousands supporting one candidate in the three-way GOP race to fill the seat held by State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth. From October to the end of 2017, Proft's Liberty Principles Political Action Committee spent $19,455 for Dan Calkins, a former Decatur City Councilman, according to documents filed with the Illinois State Board of Elections. The money has gone to television, online, and direct mail advertising. Calkins' own campaign spent $14,181 in 2017 on other items such as printing, T-shirts, and radio ads. Meanwhile, state records also show his primary opponents, Piatt County Board Chairman Randy Keith and Cerro Gordo School Board President Todd Henricks, have spent a fraction of that. Keith raised $16,733 last year and reported spending $8,046. Henricks raised $13,345 and spent $2,619 in 2017. The only Democrat in the race, Jen McMillan, raised $600 last year. Candidates were required to file their latest quarterly financial statements with the state board on Tuesday. Mitchell, who is retiring, won his last general election in 2016 by 50 points, beating Democratic challenger Christine Law. It's given me the ability not to have to take PAC money from other groups, not to entertain lobbyists and beg for money, Calkins said. I'm sure the other Republican candidates would like to have had the same support. Under election law, Calkins' campaign can't coordinate with Liberty Principles, but Calkins says he has gotten some help with messaging and campaign strategy from the Illinois Opportunity Project, an advocacy group co-founded by Proft. Proft and the Illinois Opportunity Project did not respond to requests for comment. Proft is a principal organizer for a network of political organizations bankrolled by big-spending conservatives in Illinois and beyond. The most well-known outfit in the group is the Illinois Policy Institute, where Proft holds the title of senior fellow. Calkins is among a number of Republican primary candidates who have received support from Proft's Liberty Principles PAC. Proft has also been critical of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner since the governor sided with Democrats on controversial bills related to immigration and abortion, and has lately promoted Rauner's GOP challenger, Republican State Representative Gene Ives of Wheaton. His Political Action Committee's current source of cash comes from billionaire Richard Uline, who made headlines last year for donating $100,000 to Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore. State Board of Elections records show Uline contributed $2 million to Liberty Principles. Calkins, who served 22 years in the Army and then ran an assisted living business, said he only met Proft once for an interview about running for the 101st District. He said he has accepted campaign help from the Illinois Opportunity Project because he agrees largely with its work. "We matched with our objectives, thoughts about government. We share a lot of similar concerns about the state, what we're doing, about taxes and regulations," Calkins said about working with the Illinois Opportunity Project, whose website mentions three other employees. Henrich says he will have to knock on more doors to keep up with Calkins' support. Calkins is all over the 101st District, don't get me wrong, but Dan is a Southside country clubber, and his supporters are his friends and associate that he's known around Decatur, said Henrichs, who has also received support from Decatur residents, according to records. Henrichs' biggest ticket donor so far is the Illinois Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, PAC. "He's trying to win this race with money," Keith said of Calkins. "I feel comfortable that I'm going to win this election. I'm just going to have to work harder." Keith described himself as a terrible fundraiser and said he doesn't like asking people for money, but hadn't given it his best effort yet. Campaign disclosure records show Keith has loaned himself $6,000 for the race. Calkins said he had received contributions from many sources and is not beholden to any labor union or special interest group. "What I promised the Illinois Opportunity Project was that I would raise enough money to run my campaign," he said. "I would work hard to the best of my ability to get my message out and be out in the district working, meeting people, and listening to their needs." Here's a summary of money raised in other local races, according to campaign disclosure reports for October 1st to December 31st. Macon County Sheriff. Tony Brown, Democrat, $17,565. John Butts, Democrat, $8,008. Jim Root, Republican, $1,230. Illinois Senate 48th District, Andy Menard, Democrat, $165,077. Seth McMillan, Republican, $4,365. Christopher Hicks, Independent, $0. Illinois House 96th District, Sue Scherer, Democrat, $5,750. Herman Senor, Republican, $100. County Clerk, Samantha Murray, Democrat, $1,300. Amy Ruff, Republican, $11,886. Josh Tanner, Republican, report not available. And County Treasurer, April Kostensky, Democrat, $7,980. Siobhan Francis, Democrat, report not available. And Ed Yoder, Republican, report not available. Continuing with local and state news, an article entitled "DMH Celebrates Clinic Opening" by Claire Hettinger of the Herald and Review, Dateline Monticello. The opening of a Decatur Memorial Hospital location in Monticello answers a question Tim Stone has been hearing for many years. Stone, DMH's chief executive officer, said he has been asked often why DMH didn't have a facility in Monticello, especially for people who work in Decatur and live in this community about 30 miles east. "I can honestly say, going back as 20 years ago, I wanted to do this," he said. "This is a community I have always been impressed with." The DMH Monticello Medical Center opened at 777 West Bridge Street on Thursday with a ribbon cutting and open house. The almost 4,000 square foot family medicine facility is on the site of a former Pizza Hut, which was torn down. The facility includes 5 exam rooms, a procedure room, and X-ray technology. The site has room for expansion up to 10,000 square feet, Stone said. The facility will be staffed by Dr. Zachary Shipp and nurse practitioner Megha Shelton, who are both part of the DMH Medical Group and live in Monticello, which was important to DMH. Stone said DMH seeks out local doctors to serve in its rural locations, and the results have been positive for the doctor, the patients, and the community. Experience has led us to conclude that when you place people from Central Illinois in Central Illinois, chances are you are going to retain them, Stone said. I'm really excited to be offering great quality care to everyone, said Shelton, who grew up in Monticello. Shipp is originally from Peoria. Also aiding DMH's rural sites is the use of new technology to communicate better with DMH in Decatur, which was announced August 2nd. A new partnership with the Mid-American Emergency Physicians Group will provide telehealth services to sites in Shelbyville, Arthur, and Sullivan to improve access to health care and specialists for rural patients and doctors not located at the main hospital. While Monticello is already home to Kirby Hospital and its group of primary doctors, a Carl Foundation Hospital Physicians Group, and a Christie Clinic location on the square, Stone said he is confident there is a need for a DMH facility in Monticello. We are really excited to have DMH here in town, said Kyle Kester, president of the Monticello Chamber of Commerce. We have plenty of people here to support that, and I absolutely think we need them, and we are glad they are here. Continuing now with obituaries from Section D. Richardson, Decatur. James Vernon Richardson, 75, of Aledo, Illinois, died January 17, 2018, at his residence. Funeral Mass will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, January 20, 2018, at St. Patrick Catholic Church. Family will gather with friends 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Burial will be at Graceland Cemetery in Decatur, Illinois. Rogers, Decatur. Richard Eugene Rogers of Grand Rapids, Michigan, departed this life on January 12, 2018, in his home. Services will be held at a later date in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Colley, Decatur. Roy J. Colley, 93, of Decatur, passed away Tuesday, January 16, 2018. In honor of Roy's wishes, cremated services will be performed and burial will take place at a later date in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. Hamilton, Decatur. Kathleen Hamilton died January 16, 2018 at Imboden Creek Living Center. Walker Funeral Services is in charge of the arrangements. Funerals today include Angle, Ellen Elizabeth, 75, Decatur, 6 p.m. in Calvary Baptist Church. Kramer, Robert, 93, Decatur, 2 p.m. in Moran and Gebel Funeral Home. McClung, Karma, 87, Decatur, 11 a.m. in St. Mark Catholic Church, Peoria. McReynolds Thomas, 72, Bethany, 11 a.m. in Cumberland Presbyterian Church, Bethany. Ray Gary Leon, 75, Decatur, 11:30 a.m. in Moran and Gebel Funeral Home. Robson Beulah, 92, Monticello, 11 a.m. in Mackie Wright Funeral Home, Monticello. Thompson Charles, 25, Decatur, 2 p.m. in Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur. And Whitney, Robert A., 94, Decatur, 11 a.m., Illini Cemetery, Warrensburg. Continuing now with an article from Section C, Your Money, entitled Signs Wrong, Aldi Plans Stay Same, by Scott Perry. Two signs proclaiming a new Aldi was headed for the site of the former Rusty's restaurant at Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and Pershing Road, came as a big surprise to the man whose company owns the land. Gary Haynes, president of GLH Real Estate Company, said there's a high probability that he would be the first to know. It shocked me, Haynes said. Apparently, someone didn't get good directions. It turns out that the signs, which were erected Tuesday, were put on the wrong side of Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. On Thursday, the signs had been moved, but not across the street. They were placed at different locations on the Rusty's site. Plans still call for the Aldi to be built across the street at 450 East Pershing Road, where the America's Best Value Inn had been located, said Heather Moore, vice president for Aldi's Dwight Division, According to the signs, the new store, which will be more than 22,000 square feet, will open in July. The company has been seeking to build a new store to replace the one at 1005 West Pershing Road since 2015. Its first proposal to build at Ash Avenue in U.S. Business 51 was rejected by the Decatur City Council. The German grocery store chain celebrated the reopening of its other Decatur location at 2075 Mount Zion Road in May after extensive renovations. On a side note, Haynes said the former Rusty's should have a tenant soon. He said a local restaurateur has plans to open a dining establishment in the existing building. Haynes also shared plans to construct an 11,000-square-foot building on the lot located between the Rusty's building and the Garden Family Restaurant. The now-empty site had been home to Charlie's Auto Sales, which moved to 601 East Wood Street. Haynes said the business he will seek to occupy the new building will be unique to Decatur. Customers looking to conduct business related to any of the growing list of services provided locally by Comcast are in for a surprise. But don't worry, this change has the potential of being a pleasant one. The customer service center at 1275 North Water Street in Decatur has closed, giving way to the new Xfinity store at 108 East Barnett Avenue in Forsyth. The difference is noticeable the moment you walk into the new store. Instead of standing in a line in a small lobby waiting for the customer service representative to wave them over, customers are greeted at the door and placed on a waiting list. While they wait to be called, customers are free to watch television while sitting on padded furniture or roam around the showroom and interact with the products related to the services the company provides. That list of services is growing. In addition to the cable TV, high-speed internet, and home phone services the company is known for, it has Xfinity Home, the home security and home automation platform, and Xfinity Mobile, a new wireless service. Comcast announced Thursday that Xfinity Internet customers can now bring their own device to Xfinity Mobile by visiting Xfinity store locations across the country. Select unlocked iPhone models can be activated on the Xfinity Mobile network, and devices that don't qualify may be eligible to be traded in for a gift card equal to the value of the phone, which can be used to bring down the cost of upgrading to a new device. The store also features iPads and other mobile devices visitors can use to explore Xfinity's apps, including Xfinity Stream and Xfinity Wi-Fi, and various products related to the services. The goal of the new store is to give customers the best possible experience, said John Crowley, Comcast's Greater Chicago Region Senior Vice President. Customers will also be able to pay bills, pick up and return equipment, and get assistance from sales and service consultants, the company said. Store hours are 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 12 to 5 p.m. on Sunday. And now continuing with area sports from Section B with an article entitled Robinson Scores 40 for Okaw Valley, Central A&M, Monticello, Tuscola Win. By the Herald and Review staff, Dateline Decatur. Paige Robinson has done nearly everything on the basketball court, but on Thursday, the Okaw Valley senior found a way to top herself. Robinson scored a career high 40 points in the Wolves' 60-39 win over Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond to win the girls' basketball Little Okaw Valley Northeast tournament. Robinson was unbelievable from the tip tonight, Okaw Valley coach Brad Akers said. Her teammates deserve a lot of credit, too. They played a huge role in her putting up those points. All of our girls did an excellent job of looking for the open player. Hope Ruppert and Natalie Jeffers deserve a shout-out as well. Those three have led our team all season long and will continue to do so in the LOVC championship. Okaw Valley, 18 wins, 4 losses, will play Tri-County at 7:30 p.m. Saturday at Arcola. Kyla Carson led ALAH with 14 points. Central A&M, 60, Meridian 24, Mowiqua. In the first of two games in 3 days against each other, the Central A&M defense set the tone against Meridian. The Raiders held Meridian to 7 first-half points on the way to a Central Illinois Conference win. A&M, which is 13 wins, 7 losses, and Meridian will play again Saturday in the Central Illinois Conference tournament. Haley Verdon led the Raiders with 12 points, and Channing Collins added 11, including a trio of three-pointers. "We had balanced scoring and good effort most of the time," A&M coach Tom Dooley said. "The times we didn't have good effort, I think we need to fix. We made some silly fouls and put them at the line a little bit, and they capitalized with 10 of 13 from the line." Emma Jackson led Meridian with 12 points. Chatham-Glenwood, 53, Eisenhower, 49. Chatham: "It may not show in the win total, but Eisenhower is getting going." The Panthers gave Glenwood, a top-three team in the Central State 8 Conference, all it could handle before the Titans legged out a win. Eisenhower, 3-16, and Glenwood exchanged the lead down the stretch, but missed free throws were enough to doom the Panthers. "It was easily the best team effort we've probably had in 2 years," Eisenhower coach Sean Flaherty said. "Glenwood's one of the better teams in the conference. The girls' attitudes were great. They played the game plan. We just missed some free throws down the stretch." Journey Flournoy was on fire from three-point land, connecting on 4 triples for a team-high 14 points. Mahogany Johnson-Cook added 12, Markesha Jackson scored 10, and Seven Sisano added 8. "The last 3 games, we've really played some good basketball. We just hope it continues going toward the postseason. Our guard play has really improved in the last 3 weeks, and that's why our overall game is improving. It may not be showing in the wins, but we're competitive against some of the top teams in the conference." Monticello, 62, Maroa Forsyth, 36. Monticello: "After a heartbreaking buzzer-beating loss to St. Joseph Ogden on Monday, Monticello bounced back to beat Maroa Forsyth Thursday. The Sages, 14-1, raced out of the gate to a 26-11 lead and extended it to as many as 17 early before Maroa bounced back to trim it to 10 before halftime. It was a good bounce back for us after the loss the other night," Monticello coach Dave Beery said. "I was pretty happy with the way we responded at the start of the game. We had a bad second quarter. Maroa Forsyth coach Selena Fink did a nice job making some adjustments. We had a 17-point lead early on, and they cut it to 10. We kind of got to playing out of control. We wanted to push the tempo, but sometimes when we want to play 100 miles per hour, we try to play 150, and it doesn't work. We were able to get ourselves and the game under control." Zanna Myers led all scorers with 28 points for Monticello, and Tatum McCall had 18 for the Sages. Maroa's Kate Beckemeyer had 11 points. "We were able to hold their leading scorer. She didn't score in the second half," Beery said. "We made some good adjustments on defense and offense. I'm happy because we were able to do the things we had talked about. It's a good thing when you're a coach and you feel like your kids are listening to you." Tuscola, 56, St. Teresa, 32. Tuscola: "It's been a trying week in Tuscola. The Warriors lost starting point guard Natalie Bates to a torn ACL on Monday, but went on to win that game and found a momentum to beat St. Teresa in a Central Illinois Conference game on Thursday. Tuscola, 17-3, outscored St. Teresa 31-10 in the second and third quarters." Freshman Bryn Tabling stepped in for Bates and scored 8 points. "It's been an emotional week so far. This was our first game without Bates," Tuscola girls coach Tim Kohlbecker said. "Tabling stepped into the position and is playing fantastic. Everyone stepped up their game and wanted to win for Natalie." Cassie Resso scored 9 points and had 11 rebounds. Grace Dieterich had 18 points for Tuscola, and Alexis Kester had 15 points. Dieterich and Kester really stepped up offensively and defensively and helped lead the charge. Kenzie Snow led St. Teresa with 9 points. "St. Teresa is a very good team," Kohlbecker said. "They caught us on a day when we had great defense and our team was really inspired." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Decatur for January 19th, 2018. Please stay tuned.